Thank you, Gordon, for that lovely introduction. And thank you for the music. I didn't want it to stop. And thank you, Sevenoaks, for inviting me so warmly to come today to share with you some of my thoughts about the environment and the kingdom of heaven. You know, on such a day as this, with the sun shining and the music and the flowers, it's so easy to envisage the kingdom of heaven right here on earth, isn't it? You see, this is what heaven's like. This is what it's all about. And you can see from today's weather what an effect our environment can have upon us. When we see the sun shining and the flowers and the music, our hearts lift and we respond. But perhaps on a gloomy winter day, when things aren't going too well and the weather's terrible, we can become so depressed by our environment that we see again the effect that it's having upon us. Now, part of the definition of the word environment means to form a ring around. And it would appear to the material senses that we're all environed in something. Really, every problem that we have in life boils down to an environmental problem. You can be environed in a family relationship situation, something at your work that just isn't right, something in your church, your community, your world, unemployment. Sometimes we sit and watch the news in the evening on television, and we see terrible things that are happening in our world. And that too can have quite an effect upon us, upon our environment. Another way that we can feel environed is when we feel environed inside a material body from which we would just love to get out and feel free. And I, as a Christian Scientist, feel privileged today to have an opportunity to just talk over with you some of the things that Christian Science has taught me about environment and how it has been teaching me that we really don't need to change our environment, but our thoughts about our environment. Let me give you an illustration. For many years in Northern Ireland, my family and I lived right in the thick of the troubles. We lived on the front of a busy main road. The house that we lived in was in between the two factions of our community. On the left of us, there was the IRA and all the Republican sympathizers. They were just up the road to the left, and down the road to the right, we had the Loyalist UDA and all their sympathizers. And our house, a row of houses, were just caught in the middle. And when the troubles there were really bad, when they were at their peak, and they had been going on for quite a few years, and I remember thinking that my youngest daughter had been born into these troubles, and I think about this time she might have been about 10 years old, and began to wonder, were they ever going to go over? Were my family going to be brought up in this sort of community? Were they going to be brought up to believe that that was their environment, this was the natural way of life? and I felt I wanted something better for my family. Well, we had tried to sell our house, but because of where it was situated, no one wanted to buy it. No one would even come to look at it. And every night there were burning buses and cars outside our door, and people would not go out after six. Everything came to a standstill in the evenings, and life certainly was not normal. The children couldn't have normal activities, and we couldn't go out, and for a long time I couldn't even get to church. And sometimes there would be gunmen in my little front garden, and they all wore khaki-colored masks on their faces. At first it used to be the army, and I used to bring them down mugs of coffee and tea. Then I went out one night, and when I was talking to them, I realized I was talking to the IRA and giving them mugs of tea. Another time I went out and I found out it was the UDA, the loyalist terrorists, that I was entertaining. And I had been praying very hard about this situation, but one day it sort of came to a peak. 13 bombs exploded inside 1 hour, and this was over a lunchtime. We heard one, then another, and another, and another. And when it got to about five, and our house was shaking and some windows had broken, I was at the stage of not knowing what to do. I was in the house alone, and my children went to two schools which were close by, and I wondered if I should run up to their school to see if they were all right. I remember going out to the door, standing at the front door of my house, and I watched people running in all directions. They didn't know where to run to. And one elderly woman passed my door and just looked at me silently. And she looked so sad and anxious and frightened that I came into the house and felt terribly hopeless and helpless. And I remember getting down on my knees and praying, "Father, please take me and my family out of this situation. I don't care if this house sells or it doesn't sell. Just get us out of here. This is no way to bring up children. There must be something better." I was crying and feeling very hopeless and very depressed and frightened. And then I got up and washed my face, and I noticed that on my dining room table was a Christian Science Monitor, which had come in on Monday morning, but this was Friday, and I still hadn't opened it. And as I was taking the monitor out of its wrapper, I remember thinking, if God could grant me one petition right now, what would I ask of him? I thought, I wish that he could put me and my family on a big aeroplane and take us round the world until he could find a nice, peaceful spot and drop us off. Then I thought, well, that's not very likely to happen. So I will go around the world on the Christian Science Monitor. I'll take a trip round the world. So I got the Christian Science Monitor, and I started reading the articles on the front page. I just read a little bit to give me the gist of each story. And after I got through 8 pages, I realized I'd visited 16 countries. I also realized that their problems were not so different to ours, that we were not unique Now, at that moment, that helped me, because I honestly thought we were the only country in the world who were having all these troubles. And it helped me to see that we were not unique. I began to feel a bit calmer, and I began to ask myself, what is my need right now? Is my need really to get out of here? And then I thought, no, my need right now is for me to be able to pray more effectively. Because I felt the prayers that I was making, the tearful prayers, asking God to get us out of the country, were not having much effect. And that this sort of praying wasn't doing me much good. So I began to think, to ask God to help me to pray more effectively. Then I remembered that Mary Baker Eddy, the author of Science and Health, the Key to the Scriptures, has a beautiful chapter on prayer. And I opened this chapter towards the end, and I read these words. In order to pray aright, we must enter into the closet and shut the door. We must close the lips and silence the material senses. In the quiet sanctuary of earnest longing, we must deny sin and plead God's allness. She goes on to say, our Master taught his disciples one brief prayer, which we name after him the Lord's Prayer. Our Master said, after this manner therefore pray ye. And then he gave that prayer which covers all human needs. Mrs. Eddy says that that one prayer covers all human needs. She also says, only as we rise above all material sensuousness and sin can we reach the heaven-born aspiration and spiritual consciousness which is indicated in the Lord's Prayer and which instantaneously heals the sick. Now that's what Mrs. Eddy said about the Lord's Prayer. It instantaneously heals the sick. Well, I was sick of this problem. And I began to think, if Jesus only left us one prayer, so he must have thought that that prayer was adequate to meet all our needs. So if that prayer is adequate to meet all our needs, it's adequate to meet my needs right here and now. So I'm going to pray with the Lord's Prayer with this situation in mind. And I began to go through the Lord's Prayer something like this.